There's much more I could have said this morning and much more that I would really like to say, but we must press on. What I want to underline is that the tradition, the chorale tradition in the Lutheran Church is established right from the word go. It's congregationally based, but it appears not only in congregational dress, it also appears in choral dress and instrumental dress, right from the very beginning. Somebody was talking to me during the break saying that it was the assumption had been made that somehow that Walter's book was an elaboration, a later elaboration on the simplicity of the chorale melody. And not so. It grows, both grow out together, the congregational side and the choral expression of these chorale melodies. They originate together. And very much these polyphonic settings are the model or the means by which these tunes were introduced to the congregations. And the other thing to stress again is the fact that the important hymn in the worship is the hymn of the day, the gradual lead, the one that comes in between the epistle and the gospel. That's where they were used, so that you would have, in Wittenberg, you would have a very elaborate service in Latin with German bits added. You would have a polyphonic setting of the Mass, maybe by Josquin. If Luther was celebrating, then it probably would be by Josquin, because he said that Josquin is my favorite composer, and I think he says something to the effect that he makes the notes fly, or words to that effect. So you'd have the Kyrie and Gloria by Josquin, but when you come to the reading of the word, you would have the polyphonic setting of the hymn of the day, congregational singing, choral singing, the organ playing. And this, of course, develops over the years, and it becomes the staple diet of music on the Lutheran tradition. The hymn of the day, the development of, to begin with, there weren't enough chorales to go round, not enough hymns to go round for every Sunday of the church year, but every, in the Wittenberg hymnals from Walter onwards, all the major festivals were covered. And then as hymnals developed, then they were developed along the lines of expanding the basic gradual leader so that there was a hymn, an appropriate hymn for every Sunday of the church year, every Sunday and every feast day. And as you trace the development of Lutheran church music, you find that it is the choral music and the instrumental, the organ preludes, are all based primarily on these later called Kirchenlieder, the central corpus of the hymnody, which is made up of these hymns for the day, or the season, or the feast. So these are liturgical hymns, very much part of the liturgy, and they were musically embellished by chorale preludes, which introduced the congregation to the melody to be sung and also gave them the leading note. And for quite a long time, actually, and into the 18th century, the chorale prelude preceded the congregational singing, which remained unaccompanied. But it's only during the late 17th century and early 18th century that the organ continued to play and support the congregation. But for a long time, the singing was unaccompanied, and what a splendid sound it is. Okay, so how does Bach fit into this tradition? So we look at the Orgelbuchlein of Bach for our evidence. Now, the series published by Berenreiter of facsimiles was enhanced a few years ago with the addition of a facsimile of the complete manuscript of the Orgelbuchlein. And it's a small square volume and 92 sheets. plus additional sheets to accommodate the final bars of final measures of some of the pieces. All the pages of that manuscript are ruled with sets of staves, usually six per page, but some have eight per page. At the head of most of the pages, the first line of the text of the hymn by which the melody is known, that it appears as a heading. And the overall scheme was to have included 164 melodies. So Bach intended for this manuscript to produce chorale preludes on 164 melodies. So as you leaf through the volume, which begins with what? Nirn Kunde Haydn Heiland, which was not the first to be entered into the manuscript. It was entered about a year later. Some of the Christmas ones were entered in first, which so we think. However, that's there. But as you leaf through, all you find is just simply the heading and the empty staves. Right? It is an incomplete manuscript. But the important thing about it is that not only does it give us the, was it 40... 45, 46, depending on how you count, because one appears twice. What you have is two things. You have the source of those chorale preludes, which form really the basic repertoire of the organist. I mean, every organist worth his salt must, at some point in his or her life, encounter these chorale preludes. And if you're a Lutheran, then if you haven't done so already, where have you been? But it tells us something about Bach's approach to the hymnody of the Lutheran Church, because the concept was far bigger than the eventual execution. For whatever reason, we don't, not quite sure, it remained incomplete. But the manuscript gives us the example of what he intended to do. Now, the chorale preludes were intended to be short, in the basic cancionale style, that is, embellished, harmonized form of the melody, very concise form, because usually only one page is assigned to the melody, and you had to squeeze it all in. And as you look at some of the ones he did complete, the more he continued to work on the project, the more it became a problem to him. And it seems that his mind changed, or his creativity got wound up as he did it, and he found it increasingly more difficult to confine himself to one page. So what he has to do is, he starts off okay, but then when he gets towards the end, the writing gets smaller and smaller and more cramped as he tries to fit in all the notes before the page runs out. On a number of occasions, he just has no space left at all, so he puts it in tablature, in letters, because it doesn't take up so much space to finish it off. And on some occasions, he just completely blows it, and he has to paste in another sheet in order to finish what it was he was doing. And it seems that the more he got into it, the more creative he wished to be with these melodies, and they were pulling forth from him more than he had anticipated. I think that that is clear by the way in which he only leaves one page per tune, basically, although some of the longer tunes he realizes need more space, and he does give those too. Now it seems that he was working on this manuscript and its execution in the middle years, his middle Weimar years, and it seems that he began work on it around the time of his return from applying for the post of organist at the Liebfrauenkirche in Halle, that is in December 1713. And Lohlein, who is the editor of the both the facsimile and the volume that is yet to appear in the Neue Bach Ausgabe, he summarizes the dates of the completed compositions that, well, I won't go into them, but it starts in 1713 to 1714, those that follow the church year through to Whitson, and then you can find another Whitson 1714, Pentecost 1714, that is clearly identifiable by the handwriting. And then if you look again, he went back to it again the next year, 1714 to 1717, beginning at Advent, and 1714 Advent Sunday is Nun Komt der Heiden Heiland. That's when that got entered in, not necessarily composed. We don't know when they were composed, but entered in to the book that year. And then some more were added from Christmas 1715 to 1716. And then there are a whole load that are not attached to directly attached to the main seasons of the church year, which were entered in sometime between 1714 and 1715. But there are two which were entered in very late. There are three. In Bach's later years, that is around 1740. So we're talking about around about 30 years later, we find that three were added. If you want the numbers, they're 613, 620, 631, and the fragment, which only is about 2 measures long, O Traurigkeit der Herzeleid, there's a fragment there which he started work on and never completed. So that's interesting. I mean, why he came back to it later in life. Was this part of his winding up activities towards the end of his life? He was completing things. He was completing the what we now know as the B minor Mass by the Credo and the Sanctus Hosanna and so on. He was doing that. He was completing the Art of Fugue, though he never gave it that title. Did he think about going back to the organ book line and completing it, and realize that, well, perhaps so much time has passed that he abandoned it yet again, that it was not something that he was able to do or had the time to do, perhaps. Who knows? Now, 1713 is the time that in which we think he began work on, well, I'm sure that he did begin work on it in 1713 in Weimar on this manuscript. The things that it contains may have been composed earlier, we don't know. But hymnody was a big thing in Weimar in 1713. A new edition of the Weimar Gesangbuch was issued that year, Schuliges Lob Gottes oder Geistreiches Gesangbuch, edited by the court preacher, Johann Georg Leiritz. And at the beginning of November 1713, the new hymn book was accorded a special dignity at the consecration of the Jakobskirche, or rededication of the Jakobskirche in Weimar. And it was a very formal occasion. There was a procession into the church, and there is a document that tells us that Bach was given his allotted place in that procession. And in that procession were the Lutheran pastors of the court and of the town and of that new church, or refurbished church. And each one of them was carrying important items that had to be placed in that new church. One of the pastors carried a silver crucifix. Others carried various editions of the Bible. And there was a copy of the Formula of Concord that somebody was carrying, and all the church service books that would be used. And the last of these ministers was the assistant pastor of the Jakobskirche, who carried the new Weimar Gesangbuch on a cushion. Now, in an article some years ago in the Bach Yearbook, Ernst Afgen showed that all the hymns that Bach used in the Orgelbuchlein, or intended to use, are to be found in the Weimar Gesangbuch of 1713. And QED, Afgen's, draws the conclusion that therefore this must have been the source that Bach used. However, when you make a comparison between that manuscript and that book, then you can see that Bach did not slavishly follow the contents of the book, and only a sort of superficial examination of the page numbers of that hymn book with the Orgelbuchlein, that it's very clear that Bach was working to a quite different ground plan. The way in which the order in which the hymns are included is quite different from this hymnal. Similarly, the attempt of Charles Sanford Terry to establish Witt's Gesangbuch, Psalmodia Sacra of Gotha, 1715, as the source that Bach used, is now impossible. Now impossible, because we know that the Orgelbuchlein was published, was started before the hymnal was published. It suffers from the same problem. Clearly, Bach was working to another ground plan. Yes, the hymn texts, you can find them there, but in an entirely different order. And the fact is that there is no contemporary hymnal that has been found, yet anyway, which has the same or even a similar sequence of hymns to be found in Bach's Orgelbuchlein, and that is significant. Everybody has wanted to point to a hymnal that Bach had open in front of him when he was drawing up the scheme, and no one has found it. I would say because I don't think it exists. I think Bach was, in fact, as I want to show, was working on his own plan. Now, it's possible that the germ of the idea for the collection had been with Bach for some time before he actually began work on it. In 1706, we know that he went to hear Dietrich Buxtehude, and when he came back to Arnstadt, his approach to the treatment of chorale melodies had changed, and in the place of the usual modal harmonies, he began to experiment with ones which presumably reflected the verbal content of the text, chromatic harmonies, and which apparently confused the congregation and annoyed the church consistory, and he was told to not mix so many strange tones in his organ playing. But at least Bach had begun to acquire that later mastery of turning the sense and meaning of the text of the Lutheran hymn into an appropriate musical structure that has the right emotional content. And I think it's quite likely that the plan of the Orgelbuchlein was developing in his mind while he was still the organist in Arnstadt. There is an Arnstadt connection with the Orgelbuchlein in that the paper on which it is written comes from an Arnstadt paper mill. But we shouldn't place too much evidence on that, because some of the early Weimar cantatas that he wrote are written on the same paper. So he obviously had a stack of paper that he bought in Arnstadt, which he took with him to Weimar, which he was still using up, and uses it for the Orgelbuchlein. More significant is the presence of Johann Christoph Olearius. Now, remember the name Olearius. That's a name that occurs in the in Bach's library. Johann Olearius. It was the Olearius family. They were a Leipzig family, and but they spread everywhere. And I think Johann Christoph was a nephew of the Johann Olearius in Leipzig at the end of the 17th century, who wrote that big Bible commentary, the other big Bible commentary that Bach earned, but certainly connected. Now, Olearius was the librarian of the Arnstadt Church Library, and also the deacon of the Neue Kirche, the New Church, the New Church where Bach was organist, and Olearius, significantly, was a distinguished hymnologist. I suppose you could say that if he was not the leading hymnologist of the day, then he was one of the very few. And that is very significant. And he published a number of influential works on hymnody. One of them was a reprint of three, together in one volume, the text, not the melodies, but the texts of three early Lutheran hymnals of 1524-25. So here was somebody whom Bach had to work with, who had an intimate knowledge of the 16th century chorale, and I think that it's a fact that is underestimated, I think, in sorting out where Bach got his knowledge of hymnody from. But Olearius was not... his interest in hymnody, Lutheran hymnody, was not merely antiquarian, but also practical, because in 1700, the year 1700, he edited the Arnstadt Gesangbuch, collection of 1512 hymns, revised it and reissued it again in 1702 and again in 1705. Now, with Bach's known and continued interest in the hymnody of his church, it seems very likely that early Arias had some influence on him while he was working at the same church. Something must have rubbed off on Bach. And in Arnstadt, under early Arias, Bach therefore worked in an atmosphere in which the 16th century hymn was regarded as the ideal expression of evangelical faith and piety. And this is reflected in the contents of the Orgelbuchlein, because of the proposed 164 hymns, over 70% date from the 16th century, and most of the remainder of the hymns are to be dated before, either around or before 1650. Again, that is significant too. Now, in 1705, while Bach was still in Arnstadt, early Arias began to issue a commentary on the hymns of the church year. Evangelische Liederschatz, Lutheran hymn treasury, if you like, issued in four parts, deals with one hymn per Sunday for each of the Sundays and of the festivals of the church year. And in other words, here was a commentary on the text and its meaning of the essential gradual leader, the hymns for the day, that were generally accepted in the Lutheran tradition. A very important work, and it's very interesting that it was published by one of the pastors that Bach had to work with at the time that Bach was there, and I'm sure something of that work rubbed off on Bach. But when you compare that listing with the order of the Orgelbuchlein, you find that it would be super if you could say, "Ah, look, we have at last found the scheme, the order for these hymns that Bach was working on." But not so. Nevertheless, nearly all of the hymns that early Arias deals with in that in his study of the hymns of the church year, the principal hymns, the gradual leader of the hymns of the church year, nearly all of them are to be found in Bach's Orgelbuchlein, the proposed draft. Now, that is significant, because it means, though the order is somewhat different, it does mean that Bach himself was concerned to deal with the basic hymnody of the church, and to make sure that those hymns that were used, that were needed for the whole of the church year, were there and could be used. Now, if you compare, if you have a look at the early cantatas, the Weimar cantatas, which Bach composed in Weimar, and if you have a look at the chorales that are attached to those cantatas, you will see that in fact they do not always follow what you would expect them to follow. In other words, they do not always, yes, he will use the hymns for the day that were generally accepted, but sometimes he uses hymns that he thinks is better or more appropriate, or for whatever reason he thinks he wanted to use other hymns. So that he was prepared to use the tradition, but also to add to it. And that is important. He had his own mind, in other words, as to what was appropriate as far as hymnody was concerned with the church year. And I think that is important when you come to look at the Orgelbuchlein, because I think that there you will see that there is an independence that Bach was prepared to bring to the tradition. And as I say, that all attempts to link the contents of the outline of the Orgelbuchlein, the whole scheme, to link that with a specific hymn book have so far been unsuccessful. And in my own mind, I think it's going to continue to be unsuccessful, because I don't think there is a book that exists. Now, Lehrlein correctly states that the chronology of the hymns and the way that they are grouped suggests that the earlier view of Afkin, that Bach's model, was an edition of the Weimar hymn book of 1708 or 1713, is clearly wrong. I go along with him on that conclusion, or on that statement. But when he goes on and says, this is the editor of the NBA, when he says that Bach probably in fact used a Thuringian hymn book of about 1675, I believe that assumption is less secure. You'll find Peter Williams making the same kind of comment, saying that, well, one of these days a hymn book will turn up that was printed in the general area of Thuringia, which will give us the order. Well, I don't think we're going to find it, because the research has been going on in the last 20, 30 years of all the hymn books that were published in that area, but also all over Germany, and there was no hint of any such hymnal at all. And what it means, I believe, is that we are dealing with 164 hymns in a scheme that is of Bach's own making. Now, what I did before we look at that scheme, we need to make some reference to the 33 early chorales that were found a year or so ago in Yale. I've not seen the manuscript, but I've seen some facsimile pages, and I've seen the edition, and I've talked with Christoph Wolff and some of the tentative ideas that I had. I was pleased to find that he echoed, but he was prepared to make them more than tentative, if you see what I mean. And the conclusions that we come to are these, is that first, the first conclusion is that these early chorale preludes, the 33, are clearly related to the ones that we find in the Orgel Buchlein. Nearly all the 33 titles can be found in the draft of the Orgel Buchlein, and the order of the chorales that appear in the 33, or rather the 33 appear in that order that they're in. It's not just that there are 33 by Bach. There are others in a whole collection. It's a much bigger manuscript. But of these, the sequence in which they appear in that document is very, very close to the sequence of the Orgel Buchlein. And therefore, secondly, it seems likely that Bach had been collecting together his chorale preludes, perhaps in some loose leaf form, of which both the Yale chorale preludes and the Orgel Buchlein are the remnants, the torso of a much larger collection. And thirdly, that Bach decided to preserve the best of these chorale preludes in the Orgel Buchlein, so that he drafts out the 164 titles of the Orgel Buchlein and then begins to copy in and or recompose or newly compose individual chorale preludes. Now, in seven cases, the Orgel Buchlein chorale preludes are different from those of the 33. Now, that suggests that he was able to make a comparison between two chorale preludes that he had written, and that suggests that the Orgel Buchlein was to have only his better compositions, because when you make the comparison, you can see that the Orgel Buchlein one is clearly the better crafted piece of work. Do you want me to give you the seven? No. Okay. Take my word for it now. Now, the idea for such a collection was perhaps suggested to Bach by collections of material that were then beginning to appear in print around that time. For example, the organist of the Nikolai Church in Leipzig, Daniel Vetter, privately published a collection of chorale preludes for church and house use. Daniel Vetter, V-E-T-T-E-R, 1709. That contained 68 chorale preludes and roughly follows the same kind of order as the Orgel Buchlein, mainly dealing with the chorales of the church year. A second part was issued in 1713, preface which was dated the 24th of April 1713, and it contained a further 47 items. Now, since we know that Bach began work on his organ book line just a few months later, it's rather tempting to conclude that it was influenced by this publication of Vetter, and that he hoped that the completed manuscript of the organ book line would be published because he knew that he could do better than Vetter, if you see what I mean. But his scheme would be more extensive and more integrated than Vetter's two volumes. For example, Bach's collection of chorale preludes, if it was completed, would have contained 164 pieces compared with Vetter's 115. Now, if it was Bach's intention to better Vetter, then you noticed. If it was his intention, then the first thing you have to say is that Bach put much more thought into how these chorale preludes were to be arranged. He has put much more thought into the work than did Vetter or any other composer, including Telemann or Graupner, for that matter, a little later on, put much more thought into the whole scheme. Because what I did was to go to the the plan that you find outlined in the, except that the plan isn't outlined, that's the whole problem. You go to the manuscript and all you find is a whole list of hymns and the staves ready for them. So what I did was to go and look at each of these hymns and look up when the hymn was written, what the melody was likely to be, and more importantly, the rubric under which the hymn appeared for the first time. Because I thought that if we did that, we might be able to see why Bach put these in that particular order. And when I did that, it is amazing what you find, because these are in clearly defined groups of melodies that he had in mind. And it is very, very revealing. And as soon as you do that, you don't have to, there's no special pleading that you have to do. It is there. The scheme that he was working to just jumps out at you. So let me outline the scheme for you. He begins, of course, like all good Lutherans, with Nun kommt der Heiden Heiland, and there are he begins with the four five Advent hymns, beginning with Nun kommt der Heiden Heiland, which was composed in Advent 1714. one of them, there is an earlier Yale version, Herr Christo einig Gottes Sohn. Then he moves on to Christmas. These are fairly straightforward. Beginning with Pur Natus in Bethlehem, written in Christmas 1713, or at least entered into the manuscript in 1713, and we have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and all of those were completed. All of those are there. But of three of them appear in the, you'll find that there are other, you'll find other chorale preludes in the 33 that are numbered 1, 18 and 2. 18 is the odd one out. This is the numbering in the 33, okay? Just to give you some idea that they're basically, apart from a few odd ones, that the 33 follow the same basic order that you find in the organ book line. So, look at the first one of the 33 is the Tag der Iste Freudenreich, which is number 8 in the organ book line. Clearly, here is a case that Bach, in his loose leaf, I am conjecturing, this is a conjectural thing, but I think that it's something like this must have happened. In Bach's loose leaf collection of the chorale preludes that he composed, there were at least two alternatives. The one we know in the organ book line, which he chose, and the one that he must have put on one side, which is in the 33. Same occurs with Jesu Meine Freude and Wir Christenleut. Next heading is New Year. Three hymns there, very obvious and straightforward. And Das Alte Jahr, written in the New Year 1714. There is a chorale prelude on that melody in the 33, but this one, the Orgelbuchlein one, was to be preferred. Then comes the Purification, two hymns there, both completed, Mit Frieden Freud, the Nunc Dimittis. Then follows a whole section on the Passion, numbers 21 to 33 in Bach's Orgelbuchlein scheme, and now we're beginning to find that there are some gaps that he never got round to completing. But in the 33, and one of those is number 32 in his scheme, Herzliebste Jesu, Was hast du verbrochen, which is number, but there is a chorale prelude on that melody in the 33, it's number 4. Does this mean, therefore, that this was the chorale prelude that he meant to copy in to the Orgelbuchlein? Or does it mean that he was not satisfied with it and was either was waiting until the inspiration came and he would write another one? It's interesting. We don't know, but it is at least we have some point of reference now in these earlier chorales. Then comes Easter, which is straightforward. It begins with Christlaken and Todesbanden, and there's a whole group of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hymns there. All of them were set, all of them were copied in. Then Ascension, there are two hymns, numbers 40 and 41, none of which were completed. They're just gaps. Again, Himmel aufgefahren ist, und nun freut euch Gottes Kinder all. Then comes Pentecost. A whole group of them around 9 or 10, and only 4 were actually entered in, and one of them, Komm Gott Schub für Heiliger Geist, 40, BWV 631, was entered in around 1740, so that was one of the late ones to be entered in. Then it becomes a little bit interesting now. Up to now there's been no debate about the structure, but now it gets very interesting, because we find that there are Trinitarian hymns, and how many are there? There are three, yes. Gott der Vater von uns bei, allein Gott und der Herr sei er, und der du bist drei in Ewigkeit. Very interesting that they should have just three Trinitarian hymns. They are followed by a hymn for John the Baptist, Gelobet sei der Herr. Then one for the Visitation, which is the version, metrical version of the Magnificat. There are two hymns intended, none of these were set, they're just gaps. Two for St. Michael's Day, one of them is the Te Deum, Luther's German Te Deum. And then there's one hymn which is for General Apostles' Days. Sorry, that's the Te Deum, German, the Luther's version of the Te Deum is for Apostles' Days. Then we come to the Reformation Festival, which is given the hymn, O Herr Gott, dein göttlich Wort, which when you look at the 33, there is a setting of that melody. There isn't in the Orgelbuchlein, but there is in the 33. Does this mean that this is what Bach intended to transcribe into the Orgelbuchlein, but never got round to, or it wasn't good enough? Probably that it wasn't good enough. Then comes a most interesting section that hasn't been noticed before. But it is very, very clear. Very, very clear what Bach intended. Here is a whole section on the Catechism, which links with the Klavierübung Part 3 on the Catechism Preludes. But he was doing it much earlier. Because on the first part of the Catechism, the Ten Commandments, there is the one that you know, the Heiligen Zehn Gebot, which he did complete, but there were two others on the Ten Commandments. Then comes the Creed, Wir Glauben, which does not appear in the draft. It is in the draft, but it was never completed, never written in, but there is one in the 33. Then comes Vater Unser im Himmelreich on the Lord's Prayer, which was written in. Then comes on baptism, Christ unser Herr zum Jordan come, though there is no chorale prelude written in. Then on confession, repentance, justification, there are quite a number. Our Stephen note didn't get written in, but there's one in the number 10 in the 33. Alain Zudier didn't get in the Augur book line, but it's number 11 in the 33. Ach Gott und Herr is number 12 in the 33, and then Herr Jesu Christus, Hochstes Gut, which you sung the other day, is number 27 in the 33, but the next one is number 13 in the 33. So you can begin to see that the order of the 33 approximates very closely to the order that you find in the Augur book line. Then comes a whole group of Eucharistic hymns. None of them actually got copied in, but there are 9 in there. Then comes a big section of Christian life and conduct, and only a handful of those were actually completed, but some of the gaps, as it were, can be found in the or possible fillers of the gaps can be found in the 33. There are two Quran preludes of the 33 that would or could be slotted in there. Why Bach left them out, we don't know. Then there's another significant section which has not been picked up before, and that is 114 through to 119 in Bach's scheme, and that is that he gives a section of psalm leader, metrical versions of the psalms, and he gives them in the biblical order. It's there. Ach Gott vom Himmel is Psalm 12. Most of them are by Luther too. Es spricht der Anweisen Mund, Psalm 14. Ein fester Burg ist uns der Gott, is Psalm 46. Es soll uns Gott gnädig sein, Psalm 67. And then two versions of one by Luther, one by Justus Jonas of Psalm 124. It's there as a self-identifiable section within the 164. Then comes a section on the Word of God and the Christian Church, beginning with Vision Leuchtet and ending with O Grosser Gott. And three in that section, none of those got into the Augur book line, but three of those melodies appear in the 33. Then comes a section on death and dying, and only one appears in the Augur book line, but several on those melodies appear in the 33. Then comes a self-identified section of five morning hymns, then four evening hymns, then hymns for after meals, and then at the end, almost at the end, 156 is for good weather. And then, as all good German hymn books would have, Bach has einen Anhang, an appendix. The first thing you notice about all German hymn books is that they have at least one appendix. It seems to be German mentality, if you don't know where to put anything, whether it's a dissertation or a book or a hymnal, you make a suitable Anhang, a point of disposal for it. And there are a group there. Now, sorry to sort of burden you with that, but it is very revealing when you do that, because what it means is that even though the Augur book line was never completed, it is very revealing to discover that Bach had not just listed the 164 hymns which he thought were important, or the ones that he liked, but that he had a very definite scheme on which he's working. And if you do the homework, there it is. You can see it very, very clearly. All the outlines. It was very carefully done. And if you look at those hymns, you'll see that there was enough there for the church year, because if you compare them with the early Arius listing, You know, remember that Olearius listed the main hymns for the hymn of the day for the church year. They may not, you can find them all in Bach's collection, but they may not appear in the church year section. But they were there somewhere. And it's very clear that Bach was not thinking in terms of the Hauptgottesdienst alone. And that's why they don't follow a simple church year structure. He is compiling a volume of chorale preludes which would go alongside the hymnody that was used in the Hauptgottesdienst. Therefore, there is a church year section. But he also has in mind that these chorale preludes will also be used in the afternoon service, the Vesper Gottesdienst. And a principal part of that Vesper Gottesdienst is the teaching of the Catechism. And in his Orgelbuchlein, there is this significant section of chorale preludes, or there should have been, a significant section of chorale preludes on the main teaching of the Catechism. And it is very clear that Bach had in mind of producing a basic corpus of chorale preludes that would be available for the church year for every occasion, for funerals, for weddings, for any occasion. And although the Orgelbuchlein was never completed, only about a quarter of the original concept of was completed, and those chorale preludes have become the sort of basic literature, organ literature, and quite brilliant they are, little gems of incredible composition based on the melody, beautiful things. But the unfulfilled plan as a whole, I believe, shouldn't be overlooked because it gives us a tremendous insight into Bach's own understanding of what forms the basic corpus of hymnody that is required for worship. And although these hymns are in the main those of the Lutheran tradition, their choice, their grouping, reflects very much Bach's personal involvement in practical hymnody. Now, if in Bach's view, these 164 hymns, that these are the hymns that an organist needed in his repertoire for the Hauptgottesdienst on Sunday mornings of the church, of the Sundays and the festivals of the church year, and in the Sunday afternoon Vesper Gottesdienst with its emphasis on the teaching of the Catechism, as well as the daily prayer and preaching services, then they were also the hymns which a congregation would need throughout the year, because it is the congregation's need that creates the need for a chorale prelude. So although the Orgelbuchlein was intended, in the first place, as an organist's practical collection of chorale settings, in concept, it represents a complete hymn book. And it represents a hymn book as seen by Johann Sebastian Bach. And therefore, this manuscript, even though most of it is just empty staves, is of the utmost importance for understanding how Bach approached the hymnody of his church, and providing for the hymnody, the daily, weekly, yearly hymnody of the church, how it is to be introduced by the creative and effective organist. And there is not, and I believe there will not be found, a hymnal with this order. This order is Bach's own. These hymns, the basic structure you can parallel in many different hymnals, but none of them is quite the same as this. And none of them have these hymns, and all of these hymns under those sections in quite this way. So it is a very personal document, and gives you an understanding into Bach's approach, very thinking approach, to his role as an organist, serving the needs of the congregation.
Can you believe some of the composing while incarcerated or under?
Fable, yes. Terry, who suggested that he was put in prison and used the leisure time, at the time when he was in prison, he was under house arrest actually, for transgressing the, I don't forget what he did, but the Duke didn't like what he did and so locked him up for a bit. Yes, he didn't want him to go, that's right, he went from Weimar to Curtin, that's right, and the Duke didn't want him to go, so locked him up for 3 weeks and said, no, you can't go, but then he went. But it was written earlier, it had begun earlier, yeah.
Is there any indication that in the Klavierübung, the smaller catechism chorale preludes, the small ones, the seven ones, are maybe have been intended for the Orgelbuchlein?
No. those were clearly written as one piece, and are later works. I'm not sure that I don't think that Bach would have written such concentrated pieces at this early stage. It's often said that the attitude is with the Klavierübung Part 3, the small chorale preludes, therefore meaning they are the simpler. They are very, very profound pieces of composition. Smaller in scope, certainly, but there's an incredible amount of artistry, and they're all linked together and composed at the one time, I think. But maybe, I mean, it's a question that has to be raised, but there's no way of really knowing. Though I would say that I think they come from a later period, not this early one. Yeah.
After your comments on the 33, is it safe to conclude that Bach himself considered the content of many of these 33 of inferior quality?
I think that's the conclusion, yes. That these were his early attempts as he was learning his craft. Now, some of them are very strange pieces. They sound like Pachelbel, some sound like a bit like a developed Buxtehude. And they certainly don't sound like the mature Bach, but why should they sound like the mature Bach? He was learning his craft. And what is very interesting is that it now means that there's another document that the Moller handschrift has been looked at, and Hans-Joachim Schulze of Leipzig has ascertained that it was compiled by Bach's elder brother, whom he lived with in Erdruf. Now, Bach's elder brother was a pupil of Pachelbel, so you have the Pachelbel connection there, and there was a piece that appears in the Müller handschrift which has been dismissed, which was attributed to Bach in that manuscript. The people have said, "I can't be by Bach because the style is too primitive for Bach. It's not the Bach that we know." But now that we know that the whole manuscript was compiled by his brother and the inscription was made by his brother, that means we have to consider that as an authentic work of Bach. Taken with the 33 and one or two other things, it means that many of the works that were attributed to Bach as being too immature for Bach and therefore written by somebody else now have to be looked at again, because it may well be that they were written by Bach after all, and that stylistic grounds alone is insufficient to determine whether or not he wrote them, because clearly he went through a stage of learning. He wasn't born on this earth able to write complete permutation fugues. He learned how to do it, and therefore we should expect that some of his early works should be rather inadequately put together. He was human after all.
Is not in any given spot that bad.
There's by no means.
Genius, but it's kind of like there's three different pieces occasionally put together.
It's episodic, very much like Buxtehude. But nothing like Buxtehude. You could never say that was my Buxtehude. I mean, there are elements in that which are really quite remarkable. And similarly, it sounds like Pachelbel from time to time, but Pachelbel would never have written like that. And you have hints of the genius of Bach that he was obviously going to develop later. They are a very exciting find. And who is responsible for it? Who is responsible for posterity that these should be saved? Lowell Mason. Come back, Lowell Mason. All is nearly all is forgiven.